Hello and welcome to a very special episode of The Laydown. You know I had to save the best for last, and Rachel Harrison is here closing out the 2023 season. This is Rachel's fourth time on the podcast, and she and I got to chat all about her latest horror novel, Black Sheep. We also talked about our Halloween traditions and gift giving, and I immediately forgot every book I've ever read when she asked me for holiday recommendations. It's an absolute delight of an interview, so settle in and enjoy this final episode of 2023. Hi, Rachel Harrison. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm so good. How was the rest of your tour? I actually finally got to see you in person, like a real human person.
That was a highlight. It's so surreal because I've been seeing you virtually for so long. It was good. It felt like my first legit tour, my first legit outing. And I'm just extra grateful because my first two books came out in the beginning, in the thick of the pandemic, and I didn't get to see anyone in person. So just to be able to connect with readers in person and see them is just so life affirming. And it was really, 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 really fun. And I always plan my tours so I can see friends and family along the way. Yeah. So it was just the loveliest fall full of bookish goodness and
yay
wonderfulness. Just what, like all fluffy love. And then as I promote my horror book.
As it should be.
Yes.
No, I love that. Yeah, I was having the thought. I was like, man, it's crazy that, you know, four books in and I've only met her one time. And then I was like, well, 2020, 2021. I was like, yeah, no, that actually tracks. There wouldn't have been big tours for most of them. But yes, no, it was so good to I saw you at the Unlikely Story event down in Plainville. And it was so much fun. That event space is very cool, by the way. Like that upper space with like all the cool like twinkly lights, and had like a stage and like couches, and I was like, can I have this in my house?
It's cool. Very chic, and that entire bookstore is such a destination. It's
definitely
very cool.
Yeah.
It seems to be, I mean, I don't know, I went to college in Boston, so I'm familiar with that area. So I wasn't familiar with Plainville at all.
Yeah.
But had I known it was out there, we might not have been out there when I was in college.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth planning a trip around.
Absolutely. Yeah, it had been one of my bucket list stores for a while. So I was really excited to just have an excuse to go down.
Yeah.
Well, good. I'm glad tour went well for you. It was funny because I was talking with Clay McLeod Chapman when he came to Gibson's, and somehow you came up in conversation, because if anybody lets me talk long enough, you come up in conversation. And he essentially offered, he was like, listen, anytime, if Rachel can get to New York, I can get Rachel to Gibson's. It's like, okay.
That's good to know, because I don't really drive.
Yeah.
Which is weird to admit, but I lived in the city, in New York City for 10 years. So yeah. I was out of practice and then moved to Western New York. And since I work from home, my husband and I share a car.
Yep.
And I'm still like scared to drive it because I'm like, and if I'm traveling, I can't take the car and abandon
him. Right.
So it's difficult. I like have to finagle rides and stuff. And that's how I always feel like it's like very Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So
well,
I'm gonna be in his, I'm gonna just show up in Brooklyn and be like,
show up, hi,
hello,
let's go to New Hampshire.
Yeah.
So yeah, next book we'll just, you know,
luckily Clay and I are on the same schedule, so we can come up and do an event together.
Absolutely.
Two for
you
one.
Certainly are. Which I love. So yeah, that I had such a good laugh about that. I was like, well, I'm holding you to that. So thank you, Clay. So, okay. Black Sheep. Let's talk about it. Tell the listeners what Black Sheep is all about.
So Black Sheep is about Vesper, who's a cynical 20-something. She's been on her own since she turned 18, when she fled the religious community that she was raised in, leaving behind her family, everybody she'd ever known, everything she'd ever known. She thought when she left, she could never go back, because it's the kind of religion where once you leave, that's it. Goodbye. But one day she comes home to find an invitation to her beloved cousin Rosie's wedding. And Rosie was the closest person to her when she was growing up. They were more like sisters, more like best friends. But Rosie happens to be marrying Vesper's ex-boyfriend, her first and only love. So out of spite or curiosity, but probably motivated more by love than she would like to admit, she returns home. And because this is a horror novel, it's her homecoming is not exactly what she was expecting, and things go south pretty quickly.
Indeed. I love this book so much. I think I always read your books in one sitting. I think historically I've done that for each one, but I truly like started it at work. Like, I opened Edelweiss at work, and I think I messaged you and I was like, oh my God, because there was a digital arc of it, and I finished it that night. Like, I just, and then made my husband read it, and this is his favorite of yours so far. So you've,
oh,
such a huge fan. It's so cute. This book, again, I was like sending you feral messages as I read it, because I vibe really hard with all of your books, and like I have a very special soft spot for The Return because it was my first one, and I love it so much. But oh my God, Black Sheep is me everywhere. And obviously I'm going to keep this entirely spoil free, because every little thing that happens, I was so delighted by like any twist, any turn, any reveal. I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But things like Vesper's mom's name is Constance, and I was raised by my grandmother whose name is Constance. And like, like Vesper is dealing with some like religious trauma, and I also have dealt with some religious trauma, and like, and just even other things, like Vesper's mom was a scream queen, and I'm like, heck yeah, I love horror movies. Like every little piece, I was like, I feel so seen in this book.
That's my favorite feedback to ever get.
It was just delightful. So yeah, I had so much fun reading this one. And then like, as I like casually dropped to you at one point, I was like, yeah. And there's like cults in there, and I bought my house from a cult. And you were like, oh, but
yeah, you need to tell me this story.
Yeah. So I will say, I use the term cult very loosely, because they're a very specific religion. They're a subsect of Christianity. Okay. But I do use the word cult because so we bought our house and it was like super, super cheap. The realtor was like, it's this church that's selling off. They had all these properties because they were based down south, and then they moved all of their followers up to New Hampshire because there was some sort of like significance in the landscaping and whatever. There's like a mountain that's in the exact right spot and blah, blah, blah. So we bought a bunch of houses up here. Okay, now they're selling them all off super cheap because they're, you know, the middle of nowhere. And they had this leader who passed away. And I think that's why a lot of the members kind of left. When we were touring the house, there was a literal shrine to this person on one of the landings of one of the staircases. And then like, the room upstairs that eventually became my kids' room was maybe home to a werewolf. Hard to say. Like, mysterious stains on the carpet, mysterious stains on the wall, literal gouges scratched into the back of the door, a hole punched in the ceiling, like chaos.
Like, that was the exorcism room.
That was the exorcism room, right? We were like, oh, is this where they hid the teenagers? Like, what happened here? So that original leader had passed away, I think just naturally. I don't think anything weird happened to him. But then the next leader, or like higher up, he like had an accident on, there's a mountain behind my house. My driveway splits off and half of it goes up to a mountain trail. And he like had an accident in a tractor on the mountain, and he died mysteriously. Like, and it, they just kind of were like, yeah, the tractor tipped over and he died. And I'm like, okay, that's it. I feel like you're not telling me the whole story. And we like had brought my dog up just to go hiking, and she got to a certain spot and would not go further. And that we found out later was the spot where it happened. We were like, okay, great. I feel like they've gone through like a few leaders just as in the time we've lived here, right? As they do.
So are they still around?
They are. They are. And the current person who like kind of runs things, I don't know if he's actually like the sort of minister of it, but he kind of organizes everything. He built a house behind my house. So I was like, oh, cool. A neighbor. Yay. And he did a lot of traveling to Russia over the course of the last few years, which was probably totally fine and not weird at all. And this it's a weird, it's like a, it's just odd. And like, I will say, like, anytime I've met any of them, they've been super kind, like super chill. Like, they've never like pressured us to like come to a service or anything. They're just like, hi, nice to see you. And then they move along. Like, they're, you know, so I will say that they're not like, yeah, they're not like creepy or anything. But like, there was one time I went up with my dog, and she like could hear, I could tell she could hear something. And they have these like, there's like the first kind of like landing where they have like a big tent, and it's where they do the services. And then the trail keeps going up to the actual peak. And so on this landing, they had like a construction tent, and she kept like going over to it and then backing up and like going up and backing up. And so I walked over, and there was a boombox on the table, and at the lowest, lowest volume, like volume one, there was just like a man doing like a sermon or something, but it was like on a loop. There was no one up on the mountain. I was the only except all the ghosts. Like, I was like, who is this sermon for? Are you trying to infuse the land with your teachings? Like, what? What is happening? Yeah, it's, you know, so cults, I get, sure.
There's so many more cults than we, than like we even know, because I, throughout the course of promoting this book, people ask me like about cults and how do I feel about cults? And I'm like, I'm fascinated by cults, and I like have seen every documentary. And then they'll be like, have you seen this one? And I'll be like, I've never even heard of that. I have to give a shout out. A new cult documentary just dropped last Monday on HBO, and it's a series. It's called Love Has Won.
Oh, okay.
About the Mother God cult.
Yes, I just saw you post about this.
I'd never heard of it before, and within the first few minutes, my jaw was on the floor, and it's grim as all cult documentaries are, but there's also like it's balanced out by a total batshit craziness that makes it not too heavy. Like, there was a quote from the episode that was, people ask, you know, how could God work at McDonald's? And it's like, she put the love in the food. And I was like, and on, so I've only seen the first episode at this point. That's the only one that's dropped, but it is absolutely bananas. And like, I'm all for people making their own choices, and I have nothing against drugs really, but if like ever there was a case to avoid psychedelics, it's like, watch this documentary and you're gonna be like, I think I'm okay. I think I'm gonna abstain. Like, I will go straight edge after watching one episode of this documentary.
Amazing.
But I highly recommend it if you're looking for a like totally like reality is stranger than fiction doc.
I love that. Yeah, I've been I'm on the last episode of the Escaping Twin Flames documentary on Netflix, which is like, I don't even know how to like, it feels like an MLM, but worse. Just dude is like, I'm gonna find your soulmate for you or something, but like monetized it. I don't know, crazy.
It's just so interesting. And the reason why cults fascinate me so much, or it's just, you know, we're all so like, I would like, I'm very, I said this at our event at the Unlikely Story, but I'm completely susceptible. Like, that's why I think it, because I think on a very human level, we are all vulnerable and we all want to belong and we all want to find something to believe in to justify why things happen. It's hard as humans to wrap our heads around why bad things happen.
Yeah.
And like, wouldn't it be nice to surrender all of our doubts and fears to a higher power, to something bigger than us, to trust in something other than ourselves? Or, and in that way, I think it's like really beautiful that people seek out this companionship, seek out community, and just how, and on the flip side of that, how hideous and ugly it is that there are people who will take advantage of that,
mm-hmm.
who will manipulate other people's pure human desire and want.
Yeah.
And while I was writing Black Sheep, it was really, you know, it is a cult book, but it was more, but it's also not, like, in my view,
right.
It's kind
yeah,
of not
yeah.
a cult book.
Yeah.
Because it was questioning faith and
yeah.
and belief and how some people, like, there are people out there who believe in things, who believe Mother God put love in the food at McDonald's. And they believe that that is their truth,
yeah.
100%.
Yep.
That is their truth. And there's me who's like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And, but we both, like, they believe they are right the same way I believe I am right.
Right.
And that's like really scary and unsettling.
Right.
So
Yeah.
I was thinking about that a lot writing Black Sheep. And obviously it's from the perspective of a skeptic, Vesper, who doesn't
Yeah.
believe in any of this stuff. But just the idea that we can believe we are right, but how do we know we are right?
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, it's all perception, right? Like, we're all just on this life train and we won't find out maybe till the end. If then,
right.
Who knows? Like, there's, yeah, I also, so I've thought about this a lot. I'm like, am I the type of person who would, I don't even know, like, join a cult or accidentally find myself a part of a cult? I think that's more likely.
Right.
Because I'm, like Vesper, I am inherently somewhat suspicious and skeptical, especially if there's any sort of religious aspect to it. I mean, I'm always like, I'm giving you the side eye, right? But I'm also a people pleaser.
Yeah.
And if someone, if it, like, if someone just very confidently was telling me to do things and they seemed like they knew what they were doing, I'd be like, okay. And I would just do it because I'm a people pleaser and I'm non-confrontational and I'm just going to go along for the ride. And so I think I'm the type of person who would all of a sudden look around and be like, am I in a cult? Oh God. Yeah. Whereas my husband, I think, would join a cult willingly.
Okay.
Because he's the type of person who, like, would walk by, like, you know, the Church of Scientology, and he'd be like, oh, this sounds interesting, and would walk in and talk to them. Like, he's, because he's just friendly.
I see, my husband's the opposite. He's very skeptical. And so I think that's good, because otherwise I would be like, it's strange, because I have this thing in me where this, like, rebellious nature, that if I'm in my 100% confident, if I'm in an environment I feel comfortable in, I'm very quickly like, no. Like, I have a, like, rebelliousness where if everybody else is into something, I'm like, no. Like, my freshman year in college, during our, like, opening, what are you, like, the welcome
like the
week or whatever.
orientation stuff.
Yeah, there was a big thing where we were all in a room and they were like, we're going to go around and hug everyone. And I left. I was like, no, I don't want to be part of this. And I just bounced. Like, I've been to a lot of parties that I'm just like, I'm not feeling it. And I leave. Like, in that way, I have that in me. But if I'm in a vulnerable place, like, I seek out. Like when I was in college, I would go to Salem every weekend and be like, I want to get my tarot read. I want someone to tell me that I'm doing the right thing, doing like so. And I'm just, if I sit across from somebody and they're in a good place and they seem happy and they're talking to me, I'm gonna 100% buy whatever they're selling because I'm attracted to that energy. And most people in cults, when they come to you, they have that good energy. They're in a good place. And so in that way, I think I'm susceptible and just always, searching for answers. And so like the one-on-one thing I think would get me. If it was a group of people telling me to do something, I'd be like, no. But if I'm like getting coffee and someone strikes up a conversation with me and they seem pleasant and happy and we get to talking, I'd be like, that's where I start down the path. So I just recognize that in myself. And I think when I watch a cult documentary or read a book about cults, I'm way more interested in the followers all the time than I ever am in who the leader is. It's always more interesting to me who joined and why. And a lot of times when you're watching, it's very obvious why. Like, for example, the documentary, The Love Has Won. Young women and a man who'd recently got out of the military, a man who was struggling with a pill addiction, looking for new age kind of spiritualism. And to me, that's like, oh, you just made one wrong choice. And that's, I'm always interested in that, how one decision, and I think for Vesper, she's the character, the protagonist I've written who's most unlike me. And she kind of rejects that at every turn. And I think that's why I find her admirable and interesting. And she was fun to write because she just so rejects all of that. And she tamps down all her vulnerabilities to the point where she doesn't believe she has any.
She's a really fun character to read, for that reason. Like she's strong to the point of weakness,
Yes.
right? Like, and I just love that about her, because I'm like, oh, you've put up this persona that you now believe, but inside you're still this like vulnerable person who's like, you want your family to love you and you want to love your family. And yet on the outside, you're like, no, hard passive, cut them all off. They're toxic. But it's like you still have that nugget inside. And
Yeah.
like she has this, yeah, she's a very cool character. I like her a lot.
It's fun to write a character because I feel for my previous protagonists, they were all pretty self-aware. And Vesper is not. And it's fun to write a character who isn't self-aware because since I write first person, close first person, most of the time, first person present. You're in my protagonist's head, and every like thought comes through everything. Elise, my protagonist in The Return, is kind of a self-pitying sad sack. Annie, my protagonist in Cackle's the same. Rory is sarcastic and strong and confident, but also very self-aware. And but Vesper kind of doesn't have that, so it's fun for me to be in her head, but then also have this level of like, I'm a like outside of her body, just like, you have no idea what's happening. It was a little bit of me being removed from her that I hadn't experience before in my writing process that was fun to play with, because it's fun to set somebody up to fail, kind of.
Totally. No, I that's awesome. Yeah, she's I love Vesper. I love how sassy she is. I love all, I'm just like gazing longingly at all of your books. Like, oh, they're just, I love them all so much.
It's interesting for anybody who has read the entire book will know why it's funny that she's likable. Because I set out to make her unlikable, and it's strange because everyone's like, I love her. I'm like, huh. Interesting. I can make the blank very likable, apparently.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Every twist and turn of this book, I just got more and more excited. I was just like, oh, this is everything I didn't know I wanted, which was great. So we just wrapped up Halloween. Somehow it's Thanksgiving next week, which I refuse to accept. How was your Halloween? Do you have any fun Halloween traditions that you do? Are you spooky all year round, or?
Pretty much I'm spooky all year round. It was on a Tuesday this year. I unfortunately didn't have any trick-or-treaters. I watched the pilot of the Interview with a Vampire.
Nice.
Because I think it was on, it's on AMC Plus, but they put it on HBO for the month of October. And I watched it and it was amazing. I'd never seen the movie. I've never read the book. So it was my first introduction to it, which is maybe sacrilege to admit. And I ate a bunch of Halloween candy.
What's that?
But the weekend before, there's a giant, like, there's a, people own farmland out in the middle of nowhere, and they just put up an entire skeleton army. They put out like all these Halloween decorations in the middle of a cornfield. There's just thousands of like plastic skeletons.
Amazing.
Doing all sorts of stuff. And I was, it was the happiest I've ever been, probably. And then that, so I just like frolicking through a field of skeletons.
It's my
and
dream.
Then that night, not too far from me, there's a house that does a Halloween display that is absolutely bonkers. It's the most insane home decoration display thing I've ever seen. It was Pirates of the Caribbean themed.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a full pirate ship in their yard sinking into the ground.
Oh my God.
Light shows, pyrotechnics, fire. It was a full show. It was like something you would see at Disney World in someone's front yard.
Oh my God.
And there was like a skeleton on the pirate ship that was steering the ship the whole time. Lights. The production value was absolutely insane. My jaw was on the ground. I was just staring at it. And there's like lines of cars.
Sure.
But you have to get out of your car to like, there was food trucks. It's a whole thing.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
But that was what I did the Saturday night before Halloween. And so it was a very wonderful, spooky Halloweekend before my kind of quiet sitting in my pajamas eating Halloween candy Halloween. What about you?
Fair. So we never get trick-or-treaters here because, again, like, I have
up on the
one neighbor
God Mountain.
On the God Mountain. There's literally a stone at like the end of my road that says a place to touch and be touched by God. Like, so we don't get that trick-or-treaters here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would bring
it sounds exactly
too.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we, my in-laws live like one town over, and they live in like a little neighborhood. And so we take the girls there and we go trick-or-treating there, and we watched Nightmare Before Christmas when we got back.
Your girls are spooky, right?
So spooky. So spooky. They love, like, we just decorated for Christmas yesterday, and like, you know, our little Scully has a little Christmas hat on, and our full-size skeleton downstairs, Mulder, he also has a little Santa hat on, and now we have a new glow-in-the-dark skeleton, and his name is Glowbert. So he has
genius.
Like, they're just, these are, our Halloween decorations are out all year long.
Yeah.
And they, I think it was in like May that my youngest all of a sudden just got like really sad. And I was like, what's wrong? She goes, I want to go to Halloween now. Oh. And I was like, girl, same.
Yeah, definitely. Apple doesn't fall far.
Yeah, they're hilarious. And they're like, yeah, Cordy, I think, had like 4 or 5 different, like, gorgeous witch dresses to choose from, because for her birthday, everyone got her Halloween costume.
Aww.
So she had these like ball gowns that were witch costumes. And so, like, the day of Halloween, she was like, I think I'll go with maybe the gold one because it has a cloak and that will keep me warm. And I was like,
iconic.
Go off, kid.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I was reading a horror novel the other day, and she was like, oh, what are you reading? And I told her, and she was like, what's it about? And I was like, oh, well, it's a horror novel. And she was like, who's the bad guy? Tell me everything. Kid, you are so funny. Yeah, she's super into it. So yeah, they love Halloween, which, you know, makes sense.
Yeah.
Given the way they're being raised.
Yes.
But also, like, they both kind of like sleep talk and like do creepy things as well. So, like, there was definitely one time I walked into their room because I couldn't see Cordy on the monitor, and I was like, she's like sleepwalking or something. Like, she and Fina was little enough that I was like, oh, I don't want her to go like wake up the baby. So
yeah.
I walked in and I'm like, I don't see her. She's not in the bed. She's not in any of the corners. And I, like, my eyes like skated over their closet where they have like just a pink curtain that's the closet door. And I just underneath it could see like 2 little feet. And I was like, oh God. And I like pulled the curtain aside, and she's like in the very back corner of the closet, like head down, hair hanging in her face, just like mumbling. And I was like, no, no,
no,
no. Go to bed. This is terrifying.
To be fair, there's probably some ghosts in that room.
Almost certainly.
Yeah. In the, like,
yeah,
flaw in the wall exorcism room. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. My husband's very into like feng shui and stuff. So, like, you know, he did the whole like this house is clean thing. Yeah. There's like, but yeah, almost certainly. I definitely have a video of Serafina from the monitor view of her like sitting on her bed, like staring kind of just off to the middle of the room, just having a full-on conversation with someone. Just and giggling and answering questions. And I was just like, oh my God.
This is good fodder for me. I appreciate these stories. Just
absolutely. Just take my kids, put them in your books. They're so creepy. But they have fun with it. And Cordy definitely like dials it up now that she's older. She's like, oh, I'm gonna hide and try to scare you. And I'm like, great. I'm gonna have a heart attack. But yeah, no, they had a good Halloween, got lots of candy. They don't really like, I thought I was gonna have to like wrestle their Halloween candy away from them. It's just sitting in 2 bowls in the kitchen. I think they've completely forgotten that they can eat candy and that it's I'm like, who are you? What is happening? And I think the difference is that, like, when I was a kid, I had one night to eat as much candy as I could, and then it was gone. My grandparents would take it away and it would be gone. And so, like, for me, it was like, I have to gorge myself on all the candy because it's going to be gone in the morning. And my kids know that it's not going anywhere. So they're just like, whatever.
I'll get to it when I get to it.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm breaking the generational trauma. Speaking of toxic family, we're going to fix it. So you and I are both spooky all year round. I'm curious, when it comes to holidays, because we have the holidays coming up, Do people give you, first of all, books? Do they expect books from you? And also, do they give you spooky things for gifts? Because that's a new thing for me, is my husband's family has figured out they can give me Halloween decorations and like horror themed things, and it will be the best day of my life.
Yes. So pretty much for me, as a rule, any, for my birthday, any holiday, any gift, give me something with a skeleton or skull on it, I'm going to be completely happy. Like, doesn't really matter what it is. I, on my list this year, I love Bones Coffee. They have really funky flavors that are all really great. Again, I got like an Instagram has my number. They know, they're like, she likes skulls and creepy stuff. I love Little Rooms Jewelry. Last year, I got like a skull hairpin, skull earrings. My friends will give me crystal skulls. So definitely, I love, like, as you, there's, I'm drinking out of a skull mug. There's a Grim Reaper stuffed guy behind me. I have skull candlesticks that my husband got me last year. So I love that. For my friends and family, they're not so into it. So I know better than to give what I like to get, but I do. And for books, I kind of, if I think somebody's going to like a book, I just get it whenever I have the thought. Like, if I'm reading a book that I'm enjoying that I think somebody I know will like, I will just send it to them and I'll be like, I just think, like, confirm when you receive. But, if somebody has, like, I usually, when it the holidays roll around, I don't get people books because whatever book that I would think to get them, I've already
got. Fair. Yeah.
Yep. I get too excited if I'm reading a book that I really love and I think somebody else is going to love it. I get way too excited.
I love that.
Make them pre-order it.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, and they're like, okay.
Yeah, my family knows better than to try to get me books because I'm like, well, I have no chill. I've already bought it for myself.
Yes.
I'm like, you can get me gift cards to my own bookstore. That will be clutch. But I'm like, don't even try. But then everyone in my family knows that I'm going to get them books.
Yeah.
Like, that's,
what do you, if we were doing like a gift guide, what are some books that you would recommend for the holidays?
Oh, that's a great
maybe
question.
Like two horror ones and then two more general.
Oh god, I mean, Mayfly, we got, oh my god,
I love that book.
Obviously. I love that book so much. And especially like if I'm the one gifting it, because it's like horror and Disney combined. And I'm like, that's me. There's a Mickey behind me on the show. Like, it's me.
I was Mayfly for Halloween. That's also
The Cinderella. Oh.
The Sunday before Halloween, I went to, there's a bookstore in Rochester called Book Eater. And we did trivia, and so I read trivia as Mayfly. I read from Black Sheep as Mayfly. It was the first time I'd been in public in a like costume in a long time, and I was definitely feeling silly, but it was fun.
No, I love that. I think that's so much fun. Yeah, that book. Was one of those books that like I got an arc of it, and then, but no one had said what it was about yet. And so it went right onto my shelves, and I was like, oh, like, that's got a great cover. I can't wait to read that at some point. And I was like, oh, I have all these other books that I have to read. I have deadlines, I have whatever. And then it came out and I still hadn't read it. And finally, one of my coworkers was like, so you've read Mayfly? And I was like, oh, I haven't actually. And they were like, Ryan. I was like, what? They were like, it's Disney. It's Disney horror. And I was like, whoa. So then I read it and I was like, oh God, of course. So definitely that one. I actually have already bought Black Sheep as a Christmas present for a few people. Oh, my family's listening. Shh, no, you're not. Yeah. what are some other, you know what? And this is actually funny. This actually ties in because a book that came out this year that I've actually been hand selling as a pair with Cackle is Bloom by Delilah S. Dawson.
Yeah, the
I
setup,
love it.
when I was reading the opening, because it was like recent breakup, farmer's market, I was like, oh my gosh. And then Bloom goes in a totally different
So different.
direction.
But like the vibes, like they I was like, these feel like yeah, you'd read one and then the other and it would feel right. Like it.
Depends if you like to leave on a happy note, read Cackle. If you like to leave on a grim note, read Bloom last.
So that's been I've been doing that a little bit where I've been like, oh, have you read Cackle? If not, you need to. Here's Bloom. Buy them together. Or, oh, you liked Cackle? Here, read this now. That's definitely I've been pairing those two together. Oh gosh. I mean, my whole I have made so many like shoppable horror lists this year of just like I'm feral and unhinged, and here's all the spooky books I've read this year that you all should buy. Just, I can't stop. So yeah, pretty much anything for my horror section. I'm just like, oh my God, just take all of it. Just everyone buy more horror. I'm trying to think of some more general. Oh, you know what book I really loved that was not horror? Starling House by Alex E. Harrow. That book is gorgeous. It's like,
I haven't read it yet, but I'm sure it is.
it's really good. I mean, I really like Alex's books. They're all very
Same.
different. And this one has like, it's got like undertones of spooky, but it's not. It's more, I don't know, it's got like a little bit of like a Beauty and the Beast vibe and like a little bit of like haunted house, but is it ha it's more like just sentient house. Like the house is, I described the house as like a cat. Like if the house likes you, it will, good things will happen there. And if the house doesn't like you, you will know it. Yeah, it's very like, and also deals with like family trauma and you know, small town politics and stuff. It's very like, I feel like it hits kind of a wide base of readers. So that's one that I'm probably going to be gifting a lot this year. Yeah, I've been reading almost exclusively horror this year. Yeah, it's been, I don't know. What about, do you have recommendations that are on your gift guide this year?
Think anthologies are always good gifts. Never Whistle at Night. It's a great anthology. Jordan Peele's Out There Screaming. Is out it's Out There Screaming,
Out
right?
there
Not Out Here
screaming,
Screaming.
yeah.
Out There Screaming. Two great anthologies. I love an anthology because
Amazing.
I can kind of pick and skim and things like that. My cat's snoring. I hope that didn't get picked up on the camera. That wasn't me. That was my cat. She's just like meh. In terms of, again, I pretty much exclusively read horror. So, as far as more general, I don't really think oh, Quietly Hostile by Samantha Irby. That's
Ooh,
short
yes.
essays, humor essays. So, if there's somebody on your list who's not a horror reader, Samantha Irby, Quietly Hostile. I love Samantha Irby. I'm like always laughing to the point of tears. So a good like a good mix if somebody needs or even if somebody does read horror and they just need
They just
a
need a good
break,
laugh.
need a giggle.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good one. It's been fun. I set up a display in the bookstore like last week that's just bookseller bundles, but they don't, some of them have themes, some of them are just, oh, this bookseller likes these three books and thinks you would too. And it's fun because they can just totally interchange as we sell them because we're just like slapping a ribbon on them and being like, I don't know, these three. Which has been really fun to see like what people have been picking. Mine, I went with Pink Horror. So I did I can't remember if I did Black Sheep or if I did The Return. And then I did Mr. Magic. I might have done Black Sheep and The Return and Mr. Magic. I
Yeah,
forget
pink
what my
horror
three were.
seems to be kind of
It's
I'm like,
fun.
pink horror, I'm probably in that stack.
Yeah, you are.
Chances are.
But yeah, and then I had like another friend who, or another bookseller who did one that was like, time is meaningless. And it was just three books where like the timelines are crazy and just chaos ensues. And like, it's really fun. It's been fun to watch the creativity come when they don't have to like write me a whole thing about what the bundle is. And right. They can just be like, I don't know, these three. It's that, like, my one of my managers did a bundle and he was like, yeah, you know, I'm like usually kind of known as like the nonfiction guy or like the history guy. He's like, but I you know, I do read fiction sometimes. And so he did a bundle that was spies, fictional and real. And so it's just like a mix of like spy novels and history novels about spies. And it's just great. It's been fun to see like the creativity come. And it's just like on a table and people just walk by and they're like, what is this?
I love that. I'm trying to think what my bundle would be.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I was like wandering through like horror. Like, what three do I pick?
I would do This Thing Between Us by Gus Moreno, The Militia House by John Milas.
Oh, yep.
And Catherine House by Elizabeth Thomas.
Nice.
And it would be, I'm trying to, like, they're all like vibey, scary. Vibey, scary.
Yes. You know what?
Scary vibes.
Scary vibes.
Scary vibes, head trip.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you think you know what's going on, but you probably don't, and you're going to be scared. And there's beautiful language. And because I said so, read these three books.
I've definitely done the just trust me style of like reviews or whatever. I'm like, just take this one. Me. You know me, you know what I like. You can trust me. Oh, another good one that I just remembered came out this year was The September House by Carissa Orlando.
Yes.
Have you read that one yet?
Of course. I blurbed it. Of course, I like it's right up my alley.
I love
same publisher, same editor.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, of course, I had to get my hands on it as soon as possible.
That one was, oh my God. When I opened it and it was just like, the walls are bleeding again, I was like, oh, I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm all the way in. This is sign me up. Perfect.
That's a fun one.
Yeah.
A lot of depth to it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of layers, lots of, I was going to say metaphor, but it's like not even a metaphor. I mean, it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
But gorgeous. Oh my God. Yeah. Really, really loved that one. I also have read How to Sell a Haunted House 4 times now.
Wow.
I don't reread books, but I just keep reading that one. Like, it, part of it was for various responsibilities. So I introduced Grady Hendrix at a conference last October for that book. So I got to read a manuscript of it. It wasn't even bound. They sent me like an email with like a PDF and they were like, here you go. I was like, oh my God. And then I read it again, like right before it came out. And then I read it again for like a horror book club that I'm in. And then I think, and then he was on the podcast. So I read it again for that.
Just to be fresh.
Just to be fresh. I was like, I don't, I guess I can't get enough of Pupkin. I don't know. He's just really calling to me. I don't know what that says about me. That I'm like, of all the books to just read over and over again. Let's go with the one with the haunted puppet that's terrorizing a child at one point. Oh, God.
Some books just, there's a comfort level in them.
It just hit.
Yeah.
It just hit. I mean, I have lost count of how many times I've read The Return, so.
Oh. It's been so long for me since I've touched it or opened it up or anything like that. I think it'd be too much like reading high school poetry.
I
to
get
go
that.
Back and read. I think maybe the only book of mine that I would
be able to reread is maybe Cackle.
Okay.
But even that, I don't know. It's hard to revisit once you finish, especially because, you know, we're always changing and evolving. Right. And hopefully as writers, we're trying to get better.
Yeah.
And so it's frustrating to look back and be like, ah, I wish I, why did I do that? Why did I make that choice? Why did I write it that way? Or, you know, there's every once in a while you get to a line and you're like, I wrote that? Good for me. But mostly it's cringing.
Totally. No, I totally get that. I do NaNoWriMo every single year. And then I never open that document again. I'm like, I don't even want to know what my brain came up with. So I get it. And it is funny. It's like, when I have a book that I am consistently recommending for like years, I will often try to revisit it after a few years to be like, do I remember the plot? Yeah. Do I like, you know, I've had the same elevator pitch for 4 years. Am I even pitching this correctly? Right. Like, so there are times when I'll do that. And it's funny because like, I love The Return so much, but it does feel like a different writer, like a different Rachel wrote it.
Yeah.
Which is really just, it's kind of fun. It's just like, it's like a little artifact.
Yeah. I mean, all my books are artifacts of me in a different space and time. And I hope to keep at this for a while, and hopefully it'll continue to feel like that. And in a good way. Not.
Oh yeah, of course. Of course. But yeah, no. And I mean, I can say as a fact, customers come back all the time and they're like, oh my God, I loved The Return and I loved Cackle. I loved what, you know, so it's still, they're still hitting, which is really fun. Yeah,
that's the hope.
Yeah. Yeah. My book club did The Return, my horror book club that I'm in. And I love being in a book club with like really smart people, because they like pull things out that I'm like, yeah, you're right. Wow. Like, I liked the body horror.
Yeah.
And they're like pulling out all these layers. And I'm just like, sure.
Well, I try, whenever I write, I try it. It's my hope that my books will work on multiple levels. Like for Black Sheep, I wanted to write something. My goal was to write something that felt like Hereditary meets Malignant, like something like an A24 horror movie with like a bananas, like completely watchable, like barbarian, like something crazy like that. But like if A24 made it and they had their monocle on, like, you know, so I wanted it to feel like that, to feel like dark and uncomfortable and scary, like an A24 movie, but like fun and kind of pulpy, like a Malignant.
Yeah.
And then I also wanted to explore faith.
Mm-hmm.
And some people can relate to questioning faith or coming out of religious communities or had bad experiences in church and could relate to that. And then some people have complicated relationship with their families. And so I wanted people to be able to relate to that. But if you have a wonderful family, one, good for you. And if you have no issue, never had questioned your faith, or completely happy and comfortable in your life, also good for you. I still wanted it to be fun to read and entertaining and a page turner. So I approach all of my books hoping that it'll work on multiple levels. And even if you can't relate to the subject matter, or like the message that I'm trying to weave in, you can still have a good time reading.
Yeah. And I do love that, like with Constance, Vesper's mom, she is such an interesting character because she's complicated. And, you know, if you were to ask Vesper, probably toxic. And yet at the same time, I love her and her, you know, scream queen past and her like collection of horror movie props, like the just like the way she struts into a room, like I adore her. And yet at the same time, I'm like, oh God, if she was my mother, I would murder her.
I knew that most of in most literature, film, TV, art in general, there's a mother character who's not maternal. It's very hard for us as a society to do anything but deride her or hate her or hold it against her. And so it was important to me to have a mother character who was not maternal, did not have any interest in being a mother, who was not motherly in any way, who readers could still find something to like about, connect, and maybe understand, to have more there for them to question, well, why is she the way she is? And can I blame her for not wanting to be a mother? I wanted to have that. And for me, knowing my audience, knowing my readership, and for my own personal fun, I thought, well, if she has this other thing going on, if she's a glamorous, macabre scream queen, then I'm more likely to win people over with her and to have them not just be like, well, she's a shitty mom, so I don't like her. I think it balanced it out a bit. And I get a lot of people who are like, I like Constance. Like, she's so mean. And like, and I think so I hopefully succeeded in having that a character have something about them redeeming in a way that I think most time non-maternal mother characters don't really get the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, our media tends to demonize non-maternal women. But yeah, no. And I also love the Constance lore that has cooked up, because, you know, you like, obviously you talk about her various films in the book, but also like the movie posters that you posted of her horror movies, and the way everyone in the comments was like, well, this one was my favorite, but also like, has anyone seen the like unreleased version of, and I was like, I'm obsessed with this. Like,
I should have waited until I like used the posters as promo before the book came out. I should have waited until after, because only like advanced readers were like, oh, I get it.
It's an inside joke that I get.
Yeah. It was super fun. My husband's very talented, and he made those posters. So I was like, it's super fun to make those posters. I didn't make them. I just was like, so explaining these fake movies to my husband, who's not a horror fan or horror reader. Gosh. And I was just like, so Farm Possession 2, Revenant Sickle. It's, and so she wears this gink, and he's just like sitting there like, okay. And then turns around and does an amazing job. But it was fun to, very fun to like make up those movies and to come up with all that backstory and lore and to all of the props and design Constance's creepy house. All of that stuff was super fun. And I think, again, just anytime I can infuse an element of fun into a book, I felt very strongly about that with this book and with Such Sharp Teeth, because the subject matter is kind of heavy. And so if I didn't balance it out with like, there's a skeleton model when you walk into Constance's house and his name is Bartholomew and they call him Bart, then it's just like all heavy religious drama. So
right,
I wanted a little bit of balance.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I was like cracking up reading about Constance's house, because I was like, this would be the house that I would live. Like, I have a skeleton when you first, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, there's Mulder, like, hanging out on the couch, reading a book.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I just was like, oh my God, this is, and like the way Vesper's just like, oh God, I forgot about like that thing is like in the corner. She's like walking around at night, like, Jesus Christ. Yeah. I love it. I love it so much. And I know you have like, went to school for like film and screenwriting. If you could take one of Constance's films and like wave a magic wand and have it be a real thing that came out at, you know, whenever in the decades that she was working, which of her films would you want to be like a real thing that exists in our world?
Probably Death Ransom, because that to me is like her iconic, like her, like I had to like think of it really as her iconic role. Mm-hmm. And I had like, it's like an, it's kind of, I pictured it as like kind of Nightmare on Elm Street, but like just like darker and grimmer and weirder. And I, that's the one I would want to see. And I just, I like the Mr. Ransom villain yes. design. And
yes,
I just pictured it as like pulpy fun and like her as like a young star.
Mm-hmm.
But if I had a magic wand, I would make Black Sheep a movie.
let's be real.
That's the Constance Wright movie that I really want.
Yeah. Yeah. I could be like a Mike Flanagan joint. I could see Flanagan.
From your lips to God's ear on the mountain.
Mm-hmm. I'll just tap into the cult and be like, all right, yeah, listen, what do we need to sacrifice?
Yes.
Do you need a goat? I don't know.
Do you need a lamb?
Do you need a lamb? incredible. I haven't even looked at any of my notes. This has just been like, hi, we're just chatting.
Let's talk about horror books.
That's probably the most of it. What are you working on now? Because I know you have something coming out around this time next year.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm in edits for my next book. It's called So Thirsty. It's kind of pitched as a vampire Thelma and Louise. It's fun and bloody and frankly a little bit horny. So,
oh, I'm excited.
That's the pitch. It's just a fun, crazy vampire romp.
Love that. I love a vampire.
It's been fun. I mean, I get asked a lot, like, oh, you ever think you'll write a vampire book? And I was like, oh, I think I will. And then I did.
That's amazing.
So hopefully more on that soon. But
yes, yes. Good luck with edits. I can't even imagine. It sounds like editing sounds like my nightmare. Like just, I don't know. I think it
depends on the book. It depends on the timeline. It depends on, but I mean, anybody who puts pressure on themselves, it's always, you know, I just want it to be good and I want people to like it. And I had a lot of fun. Usually my gauge is if I had fun writing it, I think people will have fun reading it. And this one was a ton of fun to write. And it's been a ton of fun to work on. So
awesome.
Hopefully that's kind of what I'm aiming for, a real fun, kind of different vampire road trip.
Excellent. I'm very much looking forward to that one.
Well, hopefully you'll get an arc.
Yes. I'll be stalking Edelweiss and you'll know the second I have it because I'll just become feral and unhinged on the internet. You'll be like, nope, Ryan got a book.
I love it.
Oh man, when I find something I love, I just don't stop. Don't stop talking about it.
Well, as authors, then, you appreciate know, it.
You, I mean, listen. And
then I gotta hop in Clay's.
And Clay's I was gonna say Clay's van. Van,
which sounds weird.
I think he has a van. I think he has a minivan.
But I will. We'll road trip on up.
Yes, it'll be so much fun. We'll have a blast.
I'll
show you the cult house and it'll be a great time.
I'm legit excited to see the cult house.
Show you all the craziness, the cross at the top of the mountain that one time I went up and it had just fallen. And I was like, I'm sure
that's fine. Yeah. It bodes well.
I was really tempted to put it back up upside down. But then I decided touching it at all was probably a bad idea.
Yeah,
so I
probably
just left it alone.
You know how freaked out the cult would have been?
Lost their mind. Although they would have then immediately been like, well, it's our one neighbor. who like
maybe, or maybe they would have moved.
Maybe they would have just left. I don't know. Yeah. I'll have to consider this. They don't go up a ton in the winter, so I have some opportunities.
Leave black sheep in your free little library and see how quick they stick around.
I'll just slip it into their mailbox, just like no yeah. note, nothing. Just
yeah.
You go. I'll take the dust jacket off and everything. Yeah. I'll just be like, I don't know, it just appeared. I don't know. That's great.
Mitchell Harrison doesn't even exist.
It's just a sign from God. You yeah. just need to read this book. Amazing. Rachel, the best time as always. Boy. Thanks for hanging out.
Anytime. We have a standing date every year.
Standing date every year. It's my favorite thing. And congrats on Black Sheep. And
thank you.
Good luck with the next one. And I'll see you on the internet
soon. Bye, Ryan.
Bye. Huge thanks again to Rachel Harrison for joining me on the podcast. I promise we'll get Rachel to Gibson's in person one of these times. In the meantime, Black Sheep is available from Gibson's Bookstore, and I'll put that link in the show notes along with all of the books mentioned during this episode. I hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season. This is the last episode of the year because Joe and I are first and foremost booksellers, and it is the busiest time of the year in the bookstore. If you're local, stop in and say hi. We like cookies and we like hand-selling you lots of books. You can email us about the podcast at thelaydownpodcast@gmail.com. Our website is gibsonsbookstore.com, and you can find shoppable lists from every episode at gibsonsbookstore.com/laydown-books. We're also on social media, and I'll put those links in the show notes as well. Continue to shop local, and I'll see you all in your podcast feeds in January. Thank you all so much for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll know when we upload our next episode, and consider leaving us a nice review. Until next time, we'll see you in the bookstore. Bye!